How are we doing, Joe? Happy Friday, my man.
Happy Friday to you too, Dev. What's on your mind this wonderful edition of the Double Play Podcast?
Well, we got lots to talk about, my friend. The Red Sox.
Episode 55, the 5-5.
That's right, the big double five. We got a lot of Red Sox to talk about. Red Sox are in a big slump. The Celtics, game three tomorrow afternoon. And the Bruins are playing tonight on a brink of possibly elimination come Sunday. So what you want to – and we got the NFL draft to recap too. So what you want to start off with first, my man?
Do the draft on the back end. We actually did a full grandiose review on the Streg Zone podcast. We had Steve Maul, Mr. Combine. By the way, he's blowing up on TikTok. I know he's been in touch with you on TikTok also.
Yes.
He did a very comprehensive draft review. We did call Mr. Combine for a reason. So for an in-depth comprehensive draft review, winners, losers, go check out this week's episode of the Streg Zone podcast, but would certainly love to dive a little bit into the draft talk towards the end of the episode. Let's talk Bruins first, because we may not have a chance to talk about them after this week, Dev.
Right, exactly. I mean, here's the thing. The Bruins have been a big disappointment in these first two games, losing by both 5 points, which is ridiculous.
It's been ugly hockey. It's funny, in 2019 – we were the team that swept the Carolina Hurricanes en route to making the finals and losing in game seven to St. Louis. This team is much better than that team, Devin. They were young back then. They have evolved into one of the best teams in hockey throughout the regular season. They were one of the best teams in hockey. Coach Tim Welsh on the Sunday show with Scott Cordishy filling in this week actually mentioned how the Bruins had been outscored in the regular season. I think it was like 16-2 or something, some crazy mark. And thus far, what was it, 12-2 they've been outscored thus far or something like that? It's been absolutely ridiculous. They've had Swayman. I think they had Swayman in one game, Ullmark in one game. Neither goalie could stop the bleeding. And, Devin, sometimes, you know, to quote my boy MJF from AEW, All Elite Wrestling, sometimes it's a team is just better than you, and you know it. And that's the case here. We are being rocked like a hurricane by the former Hartford Whalers, and they are laying the smack it down on the black and gold, and I have no reason to believe that I'm going to be working any other Bruins playoff games this year, because I don't think we're even going to take a game in this series. I will be tuning in tonight. I hope the Garden's rocking. Maybe really the only chance they can really inject some life into this Bruins team in the playoffs. And we've seen in the Celtic games, look, that TD Garden energy is a real thing, Dev. And right, it could be a game changer, no doubt about it. So it's a must win tonight for the Bruins. Stop the bleeding, save their season. The Celtics essentially saved their season with a big game 2 victory over Milwaukee the other day. This is what the Bruins have to do against the Carolina Hurricanes.
Exactly, and it ain't going to be easy, man. Being down 2-0, going back to home, that's going to be not an easy tag for the Boston Bruins. I think they can have a little ump in it. If they win tonight, then I'll give them
a little bit. It comes down to tonight, Dev. It really does. This is the Bruins season. Is why I wanted to lead off with the Bruins, because this is do-or-die mode for Bruce Cassidy and company. I don't know which goaltender he's going to use. I'm not really confident in either one at the moment. And quite frankly, in game one, we did a good job of containing them. We actually got a lot of shots on goal until about the midway park of the second period. And then it just, you know, the smackdown was put upon us from the midway point of the second period on. So essentially, you could kind of call that first game half of it a draw and half of it the worst ass-whooping the Bruins could possibly take. So, look, you need to be aggressive. Need to put the damn puck in the net. That's the name of the game. We have our guys healthy. We went and traded for Lindholm. Pasta's back. Bergeron, like, we're about as healthy as we've been in a few weeks, and we're getting pantsed on national television. So it's time to clap back in Boston tonight.
You know, as a Bruins fan, it's very embarrassing to see us be down 2-0, even in the second game. it seems like we really didn't
care. I wouldn't say it's embarrassing to be down 2-0, Dev. Not to cut you off, buddy. But it's embarrassing to get your ass kicked by 5 goals each in each game. That is embarrassing.
Exactly. And we need to not go on the power play a lot, because the refs were giving freaking Carolina so many power play opportunities. It wasn't even funny.
Yeah, I mean, that's where the whole, you know, referee calls are funny, Dev. I find oftentimes, regardless of the sport, maybe not in baseball, but definitely in football, definitely in basketball. We saw that with Draymond Green this past week. And definitely in the NHL, sometimes the crowd energy can influence the way the refs call the game. You know, like, refs are human beings too. You know, they feel that energy. And sometimes that energy, I mean, we even saw it with the Nets series in Game 4. They were trying to give every call possible to Kevin Durant and company to extend that series, even out Jason Tatum, and it still didn't work. So the fact that the Garden's going to be rocking tonight, look, Bruins fans, y'all need to bring it. Y'all need to not be unawake like you were Sunday afternoon for that weird Game 1 against the Celtics. It is do or die mode. What is it, 7 o'clock pucks drop tonight?
Yep, exactly.
At ESPN?
I think ESPN and also on Essen too.
Okay, so local coverage there if you want to watch the local. And, you know, might as well tune into the local coverage. A lot of people have been very critical on ESPN's hockey coverage. Have you watched any of the hockey on television, or more just producing the games on the radio?
Oh, no, I've been watching it on Nesson. I don't know if I'm a big fan of watching it on ESPN, because I don't think that they really interpret
it. I saw Cordishi was really critical of them. You know, I didn't mind the NHL on NBC coverage. I thought they did a fine job. But it seems very underwhelming, the ESPN coverage. Like, you know, they brought back the old music bed from the 90s. Right. I like that song. But other than that, like, the people they have doing it, and no offense to Sean McDonough, who's a Boston native, but oftentimes is on EEI with Joe Castig. Love Sean. And when he comes on EEI, he's oftentimes comical. I find when he's on ESPN, he's like, he can't do that, like, comedy bit that he likes to do on EEI with Joe and Will.
Right. Yeah.
So it's like he's more boring, like, on television. Like, and I like Sean. But he doesn't exactly come off with the excitement of, like, a Kevin Harlan or people like that on television.
Exactly. That's why I don't tune into ESPN when watching, like, you know, the NHL playoffs or whatnot. Because, you know, here's the thing. I'm happy that they brought it, but it just feels weird, you know?
Like, you'd think being on ESPN would be good for the sport, but it doesn't really feel like it's exposed to the sport where I'm having people that have not watched hockey in the past come up to me saying, oh, I watched this game on ESPN. Oh, the Avalanche are awesome. You know, you're not seeing that. Like, the TNT effect. And it's on TNT also, some of the games. And I really haven't watched much of their coverage either. I mean, TNT's basketball coverage is arguably the best sports coverage on television.
Oh,
and, you know, hockey is a weird sport. Like, you need to have the right personality, especially with the former players. You know, like Barkley, Shaq, and Kenny are so amazing on TNT. Even the guys they have working with their play-by-play people are really good. You know, top to bottom, they just hire good people, and they let them do their thing. Where with hockey, like a lot of these hockey personality, you know, these hockey players, they're crazy, but a lot of them are very introverted and aloof when you actually talk to them. Wayne Gretzky included, who I believe Chuck convinced to go to TNT, and Wayne Gretzky, the great one, had never done any media coverage, and probably has been an adjustment for him being on television. I haven't seen much of him, but
I mean, it would be nice to see him do some of the ESPN coverages since he's like,
well, he's on TNT.
Right.
But, you know, the reason why I went to TNT is because he's friends with Charles Barkley, and Charles made it happen.
Exactly. That's why I think TNT should stick to basketball, because I love hearing, you know, their basketball commentating, you know, them making fun of Chuck all the time, and, you know, Jack and, you know, Barkley arguing back and forth.
Bro, the inside the NBA has been amazing this postseason. Like, they've really been incredible, hilarious. Like, you hear Charles talk about retirement last year. I think Charles has kind of re-energized himself. He seems like he's having fun on that set again. And I think last year a lot of the cancel culture and, you know, watch what you say kind of movement affected Charles. Where this year he seems freer.
Exactly. There was one scene where he was like, you know, mixing Coke into his drink, and then just recently he had his tie longer than, you know, the
I saw the tie one, yeah.
I saw Nick Coy retweet about
that. I saw Nick's tweet also. And as someone who, look, had his father tie his tie for him until his father's dying days, I know the struggle all too well. Let me tell you.
Exactly.
I've never been efficient at a tie tying task. It's just is not. I here's the thing, Dev. Like, I was blessed with the gift of gab. I can talk with the best of them. You know, I can fight. I can, you know, play basketball. I can do certain things. But I can't exactly sit there and write with the most beautiful handwriting or fix a car or build an Iron Man suit. I was gifted with the voice. So I leave the pros, you know, the ones who are good with their hands.
Same here, man. That's why I hated wearing ties for, like, you know, freaking interviews for, like, you know, work or whatnot. I was just like, oh, man, I got to wear this, and, you know.
Did you ever have anyone tie your ties? Like, literally, I'd have my dad tie my tie around his head, his big old Oswald Cobblepot-looking head.
Oh, easy.
And then he'd, like, take it off, and I'd have to slip it over my little head and adjust it.
I usually have my mom or my dad do my ties for me.
See, my mom's really... Like, that was not really her thing. I never really asked her to do that. However, what really is clutch for me, I'm sure TikTok has these too. Like, on YouTube, they have, like, the how-to videos. So, every time I have to tie a tie, especially since, you know, we lost my dad a couple years ago, I'll go on YouTube. I'll start sweating like Shaq at the free throw line. I'll watch the same video 100 times with the winds or not, up and through. But, yeah, I could sit there and, you know, produce a million things at EEI and do this and that, but when it comes to tying my tie, I still have panic attacks and night terrors about them, my friend. Dude, like Freddy Krueger is gonna do that tie or something.
Dude, I'm floating in the same boat as you. Like, if you hand me a tie and you ask me, man, how do you tie this? I'll be like, dude, I don't know how to start. That's why I do.
It's just like instant anxiety for me. Like instant. Like for me, Devin, like if I'm confident in something, and you see that with me, if I'm confident in something, I could excel. But if I don't know what I'm doing, it could be some anxious moments. No doubt about that.
Exactly. That's why, you know, tie tying for me is not my cup of tea. So that's why you and I are floating in this. I look up YouTube videos, even though I still look at it. I still
I remember when Bomani Jones, Dahani Jones. Bomani Jones, a commentator. Dahani Jones, the former Eagles and Cincinnati Bengals linebacker. Like, he was always about the bow ties. I was kind of hoping the bow ties were going to stick, where that would be an easier thing. Just throw it on real quick. There you go.
Right. Just like how
But the bow ties didn't exactly stick. And in the media, the suit and tie look is still the appropriated look.
Exactly, just how Ernie wears it on TNT, and he makes it look like, you know, easy wearing the bow ties.
Look, Ernie's got style. Shaq said the other day, like I love how Shaq puts over Ernie for his style.
Oh, easily. I mean, they all make it look so easy, just, you know, putting the ties, the bow ties, and
I give Ernie a lot of credit. I mean, this guy's a cancer survivor. You notice his hair is finally growing back after all these years?
I've noticed that on some of the post and pregame shows.
Yeah, he seems to be in a really healthy place. I saw him in some of the college basketball covers. He seemed like it was a little worn down on that, but those are long days. Imagine that, having to be the host, the studio host of 16 games. I mean, we produce two or three, and it feels like a long night.
Exactly. And he sometimes on TBS, I see him commentate some games there too. So he's been floating around.
His father was a commentator and actually worked in baseball, I believe. So that's his roots going back to the Atlanta Braves.
Yeah, when I heard his voice, I was like, oh, wow. Like, I would have never thought that Ernie would have known, like, you know, baseball.
Yeah, doesn't he do it with Pedro and those guys, the pregame?
Exactly. So, you know.
David Ortiz also.
Exactly. So I was just
that's like, a pretty good crew, Pedro and Big Poppy. They've always had good personality.
Oh, definitely. I mean, he's been a huge, you know, favorite of the Boston Red Sox, so. I mean, him going on Fox, sometimes MLB Tonight.
They're both way better than A-Rod when it comes to the talking game. A-Rod a couple years ago was, like, really good, but then he turned to – him and Romo went from really good to can't stomach real quick. Would you agree with that?
Oh, I agree. You know, here's the thing. I love Tony Romo. Don't get me wrong. His commentator points are, like, sometimes on to it because, you know, he's been the
quarterback. I love his knowledge. I love that he can look at it, say, okay, they're probably going to run this play. He's very good at that. But it's gotten to his head, if you notice. Yeah. And, like, that's where I get annoyed with him, where he gets his little, you know, he tries to be all funny. Oh, Tom's just read out Giselle to the guy who caught Mike Evans' dad. No, shut up, Tony. Like, Tom will pinky smack you with one of his rings. Dude, you won one playoff game. Shut up.
Exactly. It's like, you know, like you have nothing to grimace about. Like, you know, just stop it.
Exactly. Like, just stick to analyzing. Stick to, okay, they called this timeout because of this. They called this audible because of this. That is good. And, you know, the same thing, like, A-Rod was pretty good at that. And then I think it went to his head. And then maybe the separation with J-Lo affected. Who knows? But A-Rod, I really can't stomach him anymore. The whole trying to copy Eli and Peyton with their broadcast style. No, thank you.
No, exactly. It's just like every time, like, you know, Tony Romo says, oh, Jim, he might have touched the ground. Oh, he went right to the left. It's just like, man, dude, we all know that you and Jim are broadcasting the team. You don't have to say his, like, name 30 times during the broadcast. Like, shut up, man.
Like Jim Nantz is the reason. Like, let's call time on the play here and call the actual. Jim Nantz is the reason why Tony Romo's the man. Jim Nantz probably had become unappreciated, at least in football, because him and Phil Simms got a bit dry. I was not a big fan of Phil Simms the last couple of years before they moved him to the halftime, which is a better move. You know, so like Romo over Phil Simms was like a breath of fresh air when they first did it. And I feel like it actually reinvigorated, like, that's what people don't talk about. I feel like it reinvigorated Jim Nantz. You know where I see that? On SmackDown. Why did it reinvigorate Jim Nantz? Because Phil Simms was old and curmudgeon and had nothing else to offer in the role, where with Tony Romo, he was able to mentor Tony Romo and groom him into, you know, the partner that he would want to work with. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, definitely, you know.
Where I would say it's similar if you're a wrestler. Friday Night SmackDown, you know, Pat McAfee is the commentator. Obviously wrestled on WrestleMania also. Pat McAfee does a great job. And not only does Pat McAfee do a great job, but Michael Cole also feels reinvigorated, where if you've watched wrestling throughout the years, Michael Cole's kind of a polarizing figure. A lot of people don't feel like he holds a candle to JR, who was his predecessor in WWE. You know, he's a professional, and the announcers, I don't know how like CBS do it, but with WWE, Michael Cole is like in charge of the announcing department. So he's the one who hired Pat McAfee. He's the one who trained Pat McAfee and groomed him to be ready to be a SmackDown commentator. So I would assume it's the same thing in CBS, where Tony Romo really went under Jim Nance's learning tree.
Exactly. And I think that Phil Simms is better during the halftime and postgame and pregame.
Agreed. Agreed. And it's like they're like his people more. Like they're around his age. I think he's more comfortable with them than he was with Nance.
Exactly. So, you know, he's just chilling back, you know, telling us some, you know, NFL facts and, you know, and whatnot. So, you know, I'm glad they did that switch.
He's better than his son. His son's ridiculous. Chris Simms.
Jeez, I mean,
like, dude, you sucked in the pros and your takes suck even more.
Exactly. I mean, I'm not surprised that they hired him, you know, Phil, you know.
I mean, he's got balls. You know, I really like Orlovsky, Dan Orlovsky. Speaking of sucky quarterbacks who do that kind of work, he's not bad.
No, I think he's a pro Patriots fan, and I, you know, his
take. He seems to be kind of a pro Patriots guy. I agree. Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, he believes in
Mac. I feel like we might have had him behind Brady 1 year. And the carousel of Brady back. I don't know. Brady had so many backups throughout the year. Like, it wouldn't stun me. Like, Cliff Kingsbury was Brady's backup in 2005. People wouldn't realize that, but he was.
I mean, when I think of Dan Orlovsky, I think of, like, you know, the Lions. I think that was, like, you know, his.
Yeah, no, same. Obviously, he's more synonymous with the Lions. Stepping out of bounds. Wasn't he the one who stepped out of bounds, throwing the ball and caused the safety?
yep. That they show all
Detroit Lions. Oh, you hope the Lions can turn things around. We had the Lions as one of our draft winners. Might as well get into some draft talk now before we get into Celtics talk. You know, I had the Lions as one of my draft day winners. I love Hutchinson. I love that he stays in the state of Michigan. I actually feel like the Jaguars should have went with him. I'm surprised they didn't. Everyone I've talked to was kind of surprised that the Jags went with the player they did over Hutchinson.
Exactly. And I'm
I'm surprised that the Eagles got the guy I wanted, the guy, the linebacker, what's his name, N'Kobe Dean. He was two picks.
He slipped all the way to the third round. And it shows, like, you know, Charles Barkley, the coach Charles Barkley again. You know, Ernie, the God's the only real expert. We ain't an expert. Yeah, it's so true in a way. Because these McShay and Kuiper, these guys, you know, projecting quarterbacks in the first round, half these dudes going in the third round. N'Kobe Dean was a first round projection. Had the Patriots selected N'Kobe Dean over Dr. Strange, we all would have been rejoicing. This guy slips to the third round. But the Eagles, and I love the defense they got in the first round also. I thought overall the Eagles probably had the most successful draft weekend, considering they were able to trade for A.J. Brown, as well as have what seemed like a few notable players they drafted.
I think what I was hearing during the trade was that I think Jalen Hurts said to the Eagles, you know, GM saying, dude, trade for A.J. Brown, and then let's, you know, we'll make our team a whole lot better. And
well, that's good that they're listening to Jalen Hurts, and that Philadelphia seems to be, you know, with Jalen and with Tua, the both of them, they both have been very polarizing. You know, New England has at least gone all in supporting Mac Jones.
Yeah.
You know, from the media to the fans to the coaching, seems like all in supporting the young quarterback. Where with Tua in Miami, we've talked about Tua ad nauseum. And Jalen Hurts also, especially before they made this A.J. Brown trade, you know, they were another team that was in on Deshaun Watson and in on some of these other quarterbacks, Russell Wilson. So, you know, it's interesting that all the quarterbacks have came and went in terms of the big names that were going to be traded or go to different teams. And now they're going all in. Jalen Hurts third year, let's give him weapons and see what he got in him.
Exactly, and that's why I think the Eagles can win the NFC East. I think they are dark horses.
They got to be the favorite. I mean, dark horse, I'd say they're the favorite right now. Giants are rebuilding. The Commanders are the Commanders. And I really don't have much faith in Dallas. They lost some key pieces also.
Right. They lost, you know, Amari Cooper. You know, they still got CeeDee Lamb there. They still got, you know, their whole offense. But, you know, I really don't think that the Cowboys will be the Cowboys. I think the Eagles will be the Philadelphia Eagles that we all expected them to be from last year.
Oh, yeah. Better. I think the Eagles are going to fly, and definitely they have to be one of the more intriguing teams. I'll tell you what, they're probably going to be one of the more used teams in Madden. That is one hell of a Madden roster.
Dude, I mean,
and, like, Hurts is athletic, so with Madden, you usually want an athletic quarterback to run around as opposed to the statuesque quarterback. Oh, man, that's got to be a scary team in Madden. Dudes are going to be savages.
Hurts, Miles Sanders, A.J. Brown. It's like, you know, Devonta Smith.
Dallas Goedert.
Yeah.
Devontae Smith.
That team is going to look stacked. I mean, man,
This
team look good.
Jeez. Seriously. If everybody can stay healthy. I mean, look, we've seen it with the Eagles in the past, calling them super teams, signing Nnamdi Asamoah and all these guys. Then they go 7-9. So, you know, like the great Denny Green once uttered at a press conference, let's not crown them just yet.
Exactly.
But I do feel like just having the conversation of draft winners, they were a draft winner with not only the players they drafted, I felt. And, you know, Cordishy says, we won't know who's actually draft winners until these players take the field.
Right, right.
But it feels like the players they took were notable, fit into their system, and they get the void that they needed in A.J. Brown and getting the most dynamic receiver they've brought into Philadelphia since signing Terrell Owens from San Francisco.
Exactly. And speaking about A.J. Brown and speaking about wide receivers being traded, I don't know if you saw OBJ's tweet. I think it was either after or before the draft. Did you see what OBJ tweeted? He tweeted two kind of cryptic little tweets, which I don't know, I believe just so far. Did you hear about this?
No.
So OBJ, he tweeted out, I think before the draft, he tagged Deebo Samuel saying, I know something about Deebo Samuel because I guess him and Deebo Samuel talked. And that was like before the draft. And then not even 2 days later, OBJ tags Deebo Samuel and says, Deebo Samuel to the Patriots. Wow.
Yeah, that's been debunked, I heard. And Deebo also recently just refollowed the Niners on social, I believe. So I have hope that they can salvage this. I do. In San Francisco. He survived draft weekend. He's still on the team. With A.J. Brown being the big player that was moved. And, of course, Hollywood Brown, and that's huge with the suspension now of DeAndre Hopkins. That's even more huge that they were able to pull that off.
And here's the thing, Joe. We play the Cardinals this year, so if he's suspended within the first six – well, he is suspended within the first 6 weeks.
Yeah, he's not even appealing.
Right, exactly. So I guess he, like, you know, he knows what he did wrong, and he's like, you know,
he's confident. Here's the thing. He's confident that he didn't knowingly take something, but locker rooms are weird. Some say, Pat McAfee had a great bit on this, on his podcast, where like with locker rooms, you know, you have a lot of times like the players' agents will cultivate deals with, you know, like Brady and his people with like the nutrition people, and you know, the supplements come in the locker room. And here's the thing with like the supplement game, it's not regulated by the FDA. Isn't that screwed up? Yeah. That's really screwed up. Like, how is the FDA not regulating this? That's, it seems like a big ugly thing that goes on. Like from what McAfee said, like, it's looked down upon in locker rooms, performance enhancing. Like it is not something that players talk about. Yeah, every once in a while, as someone that don't care, I did it, whatever, I'm gonna do it again. But for the most part, it's not something. It's something that one negative test can affect their legacy forever.
Exactly, and you know, it made me think. Like, you know, when I saw that, you know, pop up in ESPN, I'm like, oh man, it's just gonna be another crazy off season. Like, you know, I thought it was gonna say DeAndre Hopkins is traded to, like, you know, the New Orleans Saints or something like that. I was like, man, no way this is going to happen. But when I saw substance, I was like, you got to be, you know, here's the thing. I wasn't surprised, but, you know, I knew something was up when he was out for the rest of the season. But, I mean, you know, it's the NFL. It, you know, he's owning up to it. So,
and here's the thing. Like, it had to be a situation where he took something to try to recover, get back for the playoffs. They severely missed him when he went out is when they really started losing ground in the standings and losing games. So, you know, like I didn't judge Rodney Harrison. I've never been the type of dude to judge football players or even baseball players on performance enhancers. It is what it is. That's just part of the game. And like, you know, like fans and media, they're not out on the field taking these hits. Their body's wearing down. You know, I can only imagine how some of these football players' bodies feel. So,
No, exactly.
I'm not here to judge the athletes on the drugs that they take, unless it's something that, like, you're hurting people. That's where I start judging, where if your actions start hurting others.
Exactly, you know.
Drunk driving, you kill somebody, something like that.
Exactly, speeding, you know, rest in peace, you know, Haskins, but, you know, still it's just like, so it's going to be huge if we play with the Cardinals within the first 6 weeks of the season, because if the Cardinals do not have DeAndre Hopkins and we play him week four or week five, that's going to be a huge upgrade for the New England Patriots. I would feel a lot.
Well, this team needs all the breaks they can get, and if we get the Cardinals with their best player out on suspension, that's a break, no doubt about it.
Exactly. But, you know, with the NFL schedule, I don't know. Is it coming out like in the first month of June, end of May? Have you heard about when the schedule
is coming out this week?
Is it?
No, I thought so. I could be wrong.
I mean,
contrary to popular belief, I'm not in the NFL's payroll. Although I kind of am with Gillette Stadium, but that's more the Kraft Group than you know, working for Roger Goodell and the NFL.
Exactly. You know, I'm hoping that we play the Cardinals within the first 6 weeks, because if they don't have DeAndre Hopkins, we've been, like, you know, like I said before, week two or three, that'll be a huge plus for the Patriots. I feel a lot better with facing with Hollywood Brown and A.J. Green than, you know, D-Hop, Hollywood Brown, and A.J. Green.
Oh, yeah, no, having Hopkins there just makes that offense so much more dynamic, and that's why, with, you know, bringing in A.J. to Philly, they had some good pieces in Devontae Smith and Goddard and those other names that we mentioned, Miles Sanders.
Right.
But you add A.J. Brown, now everybody slides into where they need to be. Now Devontae Smith's that proper slot receiver, Julian Edelman type we expect. Now A.J. Brown could be that Randy Moss type, you know, in that offense. Dallas Goedert will get single coverage. Miles Sanders will be able to be freer in space. So it just provides more opportunities for everybody to make plays, bringing in a guy like A.J. Brown.
Oh, easy.
And subsequently losing a guy like DeAndre, it just puts more pressure on all the other pieces to step up.
Oh, 100%. You know, it's going to be like, we don't know about the
whole thing. I like Collier Brown, though. Dev, not to cut you off. I think he's got something to prove in coming from a very run-oriented offense in Baltimore, where he wants to prove he could be a 100-catch guy consistently.
Oh, and here's the thing. That makes the Baltimore Ravens a little more competitive than the teams right here. Because the AFC North, that thing is up for grabs right now, because – without having Watkins, without having Hollywood Brown, who is, Lamar Jackson going to throw to, or he's going to use his legs more often than, I mean, yeah, he still has Mark Andrews, don't get me wrong, and, Devin DuVernay, he's still out there, but,
They feel like a third place team in that division. They really do. It feels like them and Pittsburgh, the two powers. They drafted well. They've got some good, but I think it's going to take a couple years for Baltimore to bounce back. And who knows if Lamar Jackson's going to be another quarterback that wants to move in a year or two. I do feel like that Baltimore situation's wait and see. John Harbaugh's been there forever. He was actually on AEW. Dynamite this past week, watching some wrestling, supporting his friend Brian Pillman Jr. as he was best friends with Brian Pillman Jr.'s father, was actually roommates with him at the University of Miami of Ohio, Brian Pillman Sr., who played 1 year for the Cincinnati Bengals before joining the ranks of professional wrestling.
I mean, here's the thing. With Lamar Jackson, I feel like that he's going to want to go elsewhere now that his boy Hollywood Brown is with the Cardinals, because I know that him and Hollywood Brown were very tight. They were like, boys, with the Ravens. But, it's going to be a really interesting, situation. I think this is Lamar Jackson's, fourth, maybe third year in the NFL, if I'm correct?
Fourth or fifth?
Yeah, fourth or fifth year. So, I mean, does he really want to be with the Ravens with a team that only has a good tight end and really no other good wide receiver other than, if you want to say, Devin DuVernay?
To me, they lean too much on Jackson's running ability.
Right. I mean, he can't run.
Like, it's like the Falcons with Vic. That's kind of how they treat it at this point.
Easily. I mean, I don't think that Lamar Jackson is like a Michael Vick. Like, he's been to more playoff games, but I don't think he can be like the Michael Vick agility that is on the Falcons. I really don't think that Lamar Jackson is that dude.
Well, here's the thing. Vick, was a unicorn at that point. He stood out. Where now, a lot of players have this ability in one way or another, So if anything, I would credit Michael Vick in, being someone who helped change the game, where you see a lot of running quarterbacks now, where the 90s, you had quarterbacks that ran like Steve Young, John Elway could run a little bit. But really it was Vick who changed the game of, a quarterback that could affect play, not just passing the ball, but running the ball very dynamically also.
Oh, exactly. I mean, it seems like this team is they used to be on a high level of opacity, and now they're downgrading, Every team has figured them out, Joe. The Patriots have figured them out. The Bengals have figured them out. Even the Pittsburgh Steelers have probably figured out the Baltimore Ravens, and even the Browns, if you want to put them in that category.
I mean, it's a very vanilla system. It's not much to figure out. It's not like they're running complex stuff over there.
No, exactly. It's a very run up the middle, 52 wide banana, right up the middle.
Vince Lombardi would love it, but, at a certain point, you need to change with the game, and you see all these teams, they're loading up on weapons. It's going to be aerial assault for the most part. So, not to say you can't do it in a different way, but it just feels like the Ravens, they do themselves no favors in kind of keeping an antiquated system there.
Exactly. They've lost defensive players like Judon. I think they've lost they're about to lose Humphrey
I like the safety they drafted. I'm not saying he's the next Ed Reed, but
right. They could get great defensively in the draft, but I really thought that they would go after the Honey Badger, who just signed a recent deal with the New Orleans Saints. Now he's off the mark, so I don't know. It seems like the Ravens, they're not really caring minus a draft about, your team getting good defensively,
They don't feel like a team that's evolving and a team that's, when you look at the potential contenders in the AFC, the Ravens are not on the top of your list anymore, where 2-3 years ago they were.
Exactly. And here's the thing. As much as I hate the Buffalo Bills so much, I really hope they don't make it to this. Because I don't know if you saw the guy from Good Morning Football make the pick saying, "Your Super Bowl win in Buffalo Bills in Super Bowl 50.
See, that's the kind of energy that is causal to you morons losing 4 Super Bowls in a row. You're still that team, Buffalo. Until you win a Super Bowl, you're still that team. Remember, Matt, I always tell my girlfriend, don't be presumptuous. I hate presumptuous energy. Like, it's one thing to, like, shoot your shot and, like, show a little ego, like, you're in a playoff game, a little guarantee to add some moxie to your locker room. I don't necessarily hate that. But you're saying drafting a draft pick, you're Super Bowl winning Bills. I mean, Josh Allen could get hurt. Anything could happen. Not that you wish that upon any player in the NFL. But it's like the football is such a weird sport in regards of how injuries can impact the game. Your quarterback goes down, all of a sudden it's a completely different ballgame. We saw that when Tom Brady got hurt after the undefeated season, we missed the playoffs next year. Went 11-5 with Matt Castle, but still missed the playoffs.
Right.
So sometimes you're one injury away from being in a completely different situation. So, hey, you Buffalo fans, keep getting excited. Keep putting yourselves through tables, you silly Bills Mafia people. You know, put the mustard all over it. Get yucky. You know, hopefully they build you morons a new stadium, because the former Ralph Wilson Stadium is a complete dump, in my opinion. Been a dump. Will always be a dump. And that's one of the reasons why the Bills aren't taken seriously. Also, I feel like from a national scale, is like you look at their facilities and it's like, you know, it's one thing baseball taps into nostalgia, but football is all about the future, all about, you know, progressing. And it's like taking a DeLorean going to the... I'm sure Nick Coit and all the people who have worked in television could share some stories of how decrepit that stadium is.
Right, exactly. That's why I hate when people jump the gun and, like, you know, excite their team a little bit too much. Just like the guy in Good Morning Football said, you know, the Buffalo Bill winning Super Bowl champions. It's just like, man, what happens if they miss the playoffs? What happens?
Like, y'all couldn't even stop Kansas City with 15 seconds left. That's why you brought in the people that you did. You're trying to boost your team, address the needs. That's fine, but look, and you know, Bill Belichick, who has six rings, is still in your division. Right. You know, not to quote Rex Ryan, I'm glad they're not kissing Belichick's rings. You know, but like Sean McVay, like he's actually a Super Bowl winning coach now, who went from essentially bowing down to Belichick when the Rams played the Patriots a couple years ago to making fun of Belichick's draft picks. And hey, dude, you just won the Super Bowl. To the victor go the spoils. I had no problem with Sean McVay giggling at Belichick taking Cole Strange where they had Cole Strange like way down on their draft board. I had no problem with that. I thought that was hilariously transparent, and I feel like McVay is now showing the confidence of being a Super Bowl winning coach in the NFL by being freer, where before when he was younger, he's probably more like, you know, like Shaq likes to say, show them respect by showing them none. And, you know, McVay is starting to do that now. Oh, now, yeah. Again, like you got to earn the right to be in that spot. You know, you don't see Bills coaches, players saying that crap. You know, yeah, you could have won a Super Bowl and your kicker shanked a kick, you morons. There's still people alive who remember that. That wasn't that long ago in the grand scheme of things, 30 years ago. So, look, anything can happen in the game of football, and there's a lot of great teams that should have won that never did. The 98 Vikings come to mind. You know, a lot of great teams. I mean, we play a game in basketball, you know, Blake Griffin's Clippers and all these teams that, you know, Garnett and Marbury, Shaq's Orlando Magic. There's so many teams, like, oh, they should have won one. You know, the Kevin Durant's OKC Thunder, where they didn't.
Right, you know.
And I feel like Buffalo could be that. You know what I mean? Like, you got all that talent, but if you don't win, oh, you're I mean, again, people love those late 90s Vikings, but they never won. Exactly. They're the team that the field goal kicker who didn't miss a field goal and Gary Anderson missed the most important field goal of the season against the Atlanta Falcons.
That's what I'm talking about. You know, it's just like, you know, you never know what's going to happen in the NFL. You know, I really hope that, you know, the Patriots, you know, I give them a good C-. With the draft that
How many rings did the Patriots take off of Peyton Manning's fingers?
Right.
Here's an interesting question.
That's an interesting fact, too. You know, we took a lot of them, but, you know, with Bill drafting these guards, you know, I question his, you know, draft ability, but at the same thing, Joe, I'm not surprised because that's like a very Bill Belichick thing to do.
Well, we need to protect Mac Jones, and he was running for his life in December, so it's good that they're investing in the young quarterback to protect him. Yeah, a lot of people didn't feel like the Patriots had a bad draft day, great grade. Steve Maul, Mr. Combine included, who felt like the Patriots did a good job overall in the depth that they added throughout the draft. And again, like Cordishy likes to say, we're not going to know until these players take the field. It's we all want to pretend like we're experts. But who knows? Like, maybe these players fit like a glove in the Belichick system. You don't know what kind of injuries are going to happen. People could blow out their knees in training camp. So, again, like going back to the Bills Mafia, to quote my man Dwayne The Rock Johnson, know your role and shut your mouth, Bills Mafia. Go put yourself through another table, you ham and eggers.
Exactly. It's just like, did they improve, offensively and defensively this year? Sure. They got Von Miller. They overpaid him. They got Jamison
Crowder. Facts, they did overpay him. And that may hurt that franchise in the long run.
And Von Miller, he's getting upon the age. He wasn't the young Von Miller who was on the Broncos. Like, he's, sure, he won. He's a two-time Super Bowl winning championship. But, I'm just surprised that, the Rams are not, sure, they got better. They lost Von Miller, Bobby Wagner. They lost, they don't have OBJ anymore. Well, we don't know his situation, but,
Yeah, he's still unsigned.
Right. And now they got, Allen Robinson. So it seems like with that factorization, I'm not like, I'm surprised that these players aren't re-signed back with the team. Because here's the thing. I think Von Miller fit that system perfectly. I think that OBJ fit the system perfectly. I think that now.
Well, they won a championship there. They definitely did. But at the same time, OBJ is hurt. Just had a kid. So he may just be like resetting, rehabbing, and he'll focus on signing with a team when he's healthy in his situation.
Exactly. Now, Rob Gronkowski, he said something interesting on
I knew you got to bring this up while we're wrapping up football talk here.
Exactly.
Our Gronk. Each week, this week's edition of Gronk Watch.
Exactly. He basically said, I don't know if you heard about this, that
if
Julian Edelman gets traded to the Buccaneers, then I'm signing back with the Buccaneers. Like, here's what I think about that. Julian Edelman has said, Patriots forever, Foxborough.
Foxborough, baby, yeah.
There's no way in heck. Yeah, he had a great quarterback in Tom Brady years that he was with the Patriots. But now it's just like, Julian Edelman's retired, He wants that.
He's with Inside the NFL. I heard he actually did a good job on Inside the NFL in his first year last year.
I think he's a great commentator for, CBS. He's on some shows, and, he actually knows what he's talking about. And, sure, bring him back to the NFL.
And let's not forget all the injuries that he had. He could barely stay on the field. Didn't even play his last season with fans and when he got hurt again. So it's like, look, like Gronk took a full year off. Like, it worked for him to take his CBD. And, unlike like Edelman being successful in what he's done post-football with the CVS arrangement and inside the NFL, Gronk was not successful with the WWE. Gronk embarrassed himself with the WWE. I'm just going to say it. So he went with his tail running with his tail with his legs back, back to the NFL, where you see Pat McAfee, has been a great fit with the WWE. And, I could see other athletes coming in. They just brought in Gable Steveson, who's a national champion Olympic wrestler. They want to bring in more. They got this guy Omos, who's, you've seen him. He's a former basketball player. They're trying to bring in more athletes. Even Roman Reigns, I believe, was drafted in the NFL or played college football. The Usos played college football. Big E has a college football background. So,
right.
But they're always looking to bring in athletes, and they have performance centers and facilities to train the athletes to become wrestlers. Or Gronk, like, literally, Vince McMahon. The old man had to show Gronk how to do a stage dive off a two-story platform.
Jeez. That's got to be embarrassing.
Where Pat McAfee, like, Vince McMahon trusts Pat McAfee. He was, like in storylines together. So, like, to me, like Gronk being a lifelong fan, also he's friends with Mojo Rawley, who got released. So that probably works for TMZ now, does Mojo. So that probably influenced Gronk and kind of being disenfranchised with WWE also. The first appearance was the best one for him when he was in a battle royal at WrestleMania many years ago.
Right.
Sometimes less is more. That memory could have stayed forever as like, oh, a WrestleMania moment, a football player coming in, having a moment. But You know, not every athlete is a good fit. And so sometimes, like, you think you have the personality to be a star, but you don't. Pat McAfee clearly does to be a star outside of football. Gronkowski, at least in professional wrestling, I mean, he does well with Nickelodeon. He probably could do that for life. You know, his act, this big, silly, grown-ass man, that works well for that kind of vibe, but not everything. So, like, Gronk, just accept the fact that Edelman is successful, more successful than you were in his post-football endeavors, and it's a joke. It really, like, to me, it's just, they're trying to needle New England. They're trying to be, they love being the heels, and, like, Gronk knew that was going to get a reaction from Patriot fans, and like, what? Like, would he want Edelman? So Edelman, all right, let's play this game. Edelman comes back, then he gets lit up, you know, in preseason or an early game, gets a concussion, hurts his knee, right. Can't play with his kids, can't, you know what I mean? Like, he's got his post-football life set. You have to be able to accept the fact that you're done and move on. Not everybody's Tom Brady, who's an anomaly, who's playing on anger to rewrite the history books.
Right. You know, in that situation, it's just like, you know, let Edelman be, you know, this is your life. You know, you don't really have to decide whether or not Julian Edelman gets traded to the Buccaneers. You know, like we said before, he said Foxborough forever. That means he's staying with New England. You know, if you ever return or if he ever wants to play football again, which I don't see it happening. Julian Edelman, he's a 3-time championship. So,
you know, he has nothing left to prove. Neither does Gronk, by the way. Gronk just clearly isn't content. He can't make that decision. He retired, he unretired, he won another ring. They were in the playoffs last year. It's like, either go back and play with Tom, go sign with another team. Like, stop with whatever you're doing, Gronk. Because I love Gronk and Brady, but they're I'm probably one of their biggest fans, both of them, forever. I've met them both, but their ex growing thin, even with me, who's one of their more loyal supporters.
Right. You know, it's just like, you know, either you sign a deal with the Buccaneers and you play with your boy Brady for, you know, however long until Brady decides he wants to retire, when it could be in his 50s or whenever Tom Brady decides to retire, and then you call it a year. You know, you got 4 championships. What else do you need to prove? Like, seriously.
I always say, like I respect an adult who can make a decision and stick with it, and you know, like with Gronk and with Brady, it's like the retirement, unretirement, fake retirements. It's all becoming a bit just hard to stomach.
Exactly. You know, there's still a lot of free agents that are out there that haven't been signed anywhere, with Landry, with OBJ. You know, I'm surprised that Julio Jones hasn't been.
I think Julio's going to go to Indy. Yeah. That's my suspicion. Reunite with Matt Ryan. I saw Matt Ryan on McAfee's podcast last week, and the fact that Julio was a free agent was brought up, and it kind of intrigued Ryan. So I can see he's got nothing but respect for Julio. He says Julio is probably one of the biggest reasons why he's been a successful quarterback in this league. So I think he's very open-minded to reunite with his former Falcon wide receiver.
Exactly. You know, once I heard that the Titans are releasing Julio Jones, I was like, oh, wow, you know. Because here's the thing.
He wasn't a good fit there. And quite frankly, the Titans, I mean, you know, they draft a young quarterback. Tannehill make news this week saying, oh, I don't want to mentor him. Like, he didn't necessarily say it like that. The media, once again, ran with something and overblew it. But the Titans, I don't think they're going to be in the playoff mix this year. You just traded AJ Brown. You know, beast mode's getting older. Derrick Henry. So I just... You know, they had their chance there a couple years of being in the shine, and I think they drafted that young quarterback knowing that, okay, I think we need to reset here. We just traded AJ Brown. You know, they may be trying to reset to get back in it in a couple years, as opposed to trying to force being a contender this year.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe Ryan Tannehill's job could be up for grabs with, you know.
I'm just gonna say it. Ryan Tannehill sucks.
Yeah. I saw his press conference after, you know, the drafting, and what he said absolutely was ballistic.
I didn't have that much of a problem with it, but I just think overall he sucks. And, you know, if he was confident, he'd be like, oh, they drafted a guy, I'm not worried about it. You know, like he's clearly concerned about it. And he clearly knows that, you know, he was borderline out the league with his experience with the Dolphins. The Titans took a chance on him. He actually, you know, was behind Marcus Mariota, who was drafted second overall. He got a chance with Mariota flaming out there. And look, he had a couple years there, put up some decent numbers with having Corey Davis and having A.J. Brown. Those guys are long gone.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, it's just like, you know, here's the thing. His years with Miami have gone, and it seems like his time with Tennessee is coming to an abrupt end, because it's not like the drafted, you know, this quarterback, it wasn't like, hey, you know, your job could be up for grabs. I think this offseason is going to come to an abrupt end, and I think that many people are going to be upset with the whole, you know, Tannehill situation, but you know what? Change is sometimes good, and it needs to happen now.
Yeah, I mean, with Tannehill, to me, like, who's going to really be interested in him? Like,
no one. Let's see.
I think Baker Mayfield has more intrigue. I mean, the Falcons have Mariota, and they have Matt Ryan's dead cap hit this year and Calvin Ridley's dead cap hit this year. So the Falcons, you know, they'll try to develop their young players and Kyle Pitts, the young receiver they drafted. But I think they're just going to roll with Mariota and then draft a young quarterback next year when the class is projected to be better.
And everyone was expecting the Falcons to draft a quarterback this season, you know, but they didn't. I thought, you know, Wills was going to go to the Falcons, but he went.
I mean, hey, good for Mariota earning a chance to start, where he was a guy that Patriot fans were looking at a couple years ago before we drafted Mac Jones. So
exactly.
I don't hate Marcus Mariota. I mean, Jameis Winston's gotten his second chance in the Saints, and seems like he's getting a third chance with the Saints at this point. So I don't mind Mariota getting a shot. They have a lot of weapons there. Not a lot, but a decent amount. Cordell Patterson, young receiver they drafted, Kyle Pitts. So we'll see what they got. We'll see if Mariota can do something. Maybe Mariota will have a better year than Tannehill. I think he has better weapons than Tannehill. The guy who took Tannehill, I mean, the guy who lost the job to Tannehill in the first place.
Exactly. So,
like, I think I'd rather have Hank Hill as my quarterback at this point than Tannehill.
Oh, exactly. I mean, they have so many backup quarterbacks that they could use over Mariota, but I guess they want to go with the young gun and say go for it. Use Mariota, and I think that, you know, this team can go possibly maybe far, but, you know, they have the Buccaneers to deal with in that division. So, good luck.
Yeah, no, seriously. And that's the thing. That's the one division where you look at and say, Bucks win, everybody else is rebuilding. Right. Like where every other division is, who knows? I mean, maybe Philly's the dominant division in the NFC East, but, you know, Buffalo with the AFC East, Buffalo, but everybody else is in the mix. You know, AFC West, look at how tight that division is going to be. So it's going to be an interesting year with the parity in football. Even, you know, piggybacking off last year with the parity, I think we're going to see even more parity this year.
I think so, too. I think a lot of stuff is going to go down during the season, too. I think you're going to see a lot of teammates being mad at each other, and maybe Diggs could possibly be out of Buffalo. I don't know.
Oh, he just resigned. That's not happening.
Well,
that's an optimistic Patriots. Yeah, you're running Diggs out of Buffalo. Let's see if they flame out in the playoffs again, and then maybe that conversation can be brought up again.
Well, here's the thing, Joe. They got what they wanted. They got, you know, a chance in the playoffs. So, you know, with all their whining and complaining with, you know, Josh Allen would have won that game if, you know.
Yeah, they did change the rules. So like, yeah, exactly. Like, so are losers. Instead of going back saying, what can we do to, you know, change it, they bitch about the rule. Just like the Colts used to. They're just like the Colts. And the Colts, you know, they ended up winning one in a down year where you beat a crappy Bears team. Whoopity-doo. And quite frankly, Peyton Manning barely even did anything in that playoffs. Adam Vinatieri did more for the Colts to win games in that playoff run than at Peyton Manning, quite frankly.
Right. And it's just like, you know, the same thing with Kansas City fans. When we beat them at their home turf in Oakland, they would have said, oh, if you would have gave Pat Mahomes a second chance.
I always like to say, Devin, win with dignity, lose with grace. And, like, so much sore loser energy. Ah, we lost, changed the rules. Like, it's getting a little sickening with how that's affecting football. I can see, like, an egregious bad call, like the one a couple years ago, the pass interference that wasn't called against the Saints-Vikings game, and then ended up changing the rules there. That's fine. You're changing the rules just because one fan base is mad they lost. Get out of that. This is Bill Polian and the Colts all over again, bitching about the bump and run coverage and the stuff we used to do, you know, even up to and including Deflategate. So get out of here. Like, I hate that. Complain energy. Like, it's competition, it's sports, and, you know, do what you got to do to get better and get on top instead of, you know, bitching about the game and trying to manipulate the rules like you're like a poker game with your boys or something. Get out of here.
Like, you know, you and I have been at Tom Brady's last, you know, playoff game, and it was tough to watch that game.
Well, in New England.
Right, in New England. You know, but it was just like, you know, you don't see us complaining, saying, oh, you know, there were so many complaints. No, we took the loss, and, you know, sure, was it a hard loss to see? Yeah, it was a hard loss to see Tom Brady lose.
I mean, there's been a lot of hard losses. We lost two Super Bowls to the Giants. We lost with Tom Brady balling out us to the Super Bowl against those damn Eagles with Nick Foles. And, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, Brandon Cooks got hurt in that game. Things happen. You just deal with it.
Right.
Malcolm Butler thing happened. Like, you deal with it. And now Malcolm Butler's back. So they obviously forgave each other, both parties.
Exactly. The Patriots
and Malcolm Butler.
And here's the thing. I'm excited to see what Malcolm Butler can do for this Patriots team, because if he can do a better job than what J.C. Jackson would have done, then I'll say, hey, you know, hey, bring him back, boy.
It's just nice to see him finish up and, you know, get respected by the fans. Have a little, you know, respected goodbye tour by the fans, because that moment deserves it.
Right. It really. You know, and I think I heard his press conference saying that, you know, that him and Bill talk things over and now everything's, like, you know, good as golden. So it seems like, you know, Bill's giving people second chances in life. So we'll see what Malcolm Butler can do.
Exactly. And that's the perfect, like, forgiveness is divine. Yeah, those two parties can work each other out. One of the more polarizing, you know, stories we talked about a couple years ago with the Malcolm Butler situation, literally probably until Tom Brady left, was the most talked about thing Patriots related on sports radio, I would say, until the Tom Brady thing happened. So, you know, like the sore loser energy, it gets so just like draining to deal with. And that's why, like, I can see you not have any love, no disrespect to Rob Duguay or any Buffalo fans or friends with, but like the actual Bills Mafia, like the complaining about the call, like, you got your way. Hey, if you're losing the playoffs, what you gonna excuse now? You're gonna widen the goalpost if your kicker shanks the kick like Josh Norwood did. The damn tapeworms, get out of here.
Right, you know.
Yeah. You keep frying your brain cells in those parking lots. I've walked through those parking lots of Buffalo games. I know what goes on there. There ain't much brain cells left, let me tell you.
Exactly. It's just like people just need to accept defeat and do it like that. Because here's the thing. I love it when people hate on the Patriots because they hate on all of our success that we've had for the past 10, 15 years with the greatest quarterback of all time. And now we have the greatest coach. And here's the thing. I think Macron's second year is going to be a very interesting year. I think he's going to prove all the haters wrong. People are going to say, oh, the Patriots, you know, they didn't do nothing in the offseason. Sure, we didn't do nothing. We got Devontae Parker from our arch rivals, the Dolphins. We got Mac Wilson from the Browns, and we traded Chase Winovich. I think that was a great idea. I think Wilson's going to do a lot better job than, you know, what Winovich would have done. We got Jabril Peppers from the Giants. And we just got, you know, Malcolm Butler, you know, from the Cardinals. You know, no one gave him a chance, but it seems like, you know, with the Patriots, I think that, you know, and we got the guy, Terrence Mitchell, who's been very excited to come here for the New England Patriots. So I think this team has a lot to prove within the next couple of seasons.
No, absolutely, Dev. You're absolutely right. And again, like, you know, we spent a lot of money offseason last year. Some players looked great. Some players not so great. Players like Jonnu Smith and Aguilar, if he's still here, have to improve. Have to be more contributors. You know, Parker coming in here, he had a great rookie year, kind of got lost in the shuffle. Hopefully him and Mac Jones can have something. Like I said, Jonnu Smith, he has to improve leaps and bounds. We are paying him Rob Gronkowski-level money, George Kittle-level money, and he did not do squadoosh last year. He couldn't catch a damn he couldn't catch COVID while COVID was running. He was so bad. So, look, he just needs to improve, and a lot of Mac Jones' improvement is going to be on the play of the players catching the ball. And, you know, Stevenson showed a lot of promise. I could see maybe them trading Damian Harris if the game plan. Yeah. If the game plan is to make the bell cow Stevenson in the future.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it never hurts to have two. You see it with Green Bay Packers or Aaron Jones and AJ Dillon. You know, like that's pretty much what they have there with those two running backs. And they draft, you know, and they say J.J. Taylor's looking really good. And they drafted another running back. So
two running backs they drafted.
Yeah, two running backs. So I wouldn't be stunned if they were as long as I guess I wouldn't want to trade him for nothing. But like if like Damian Harris is part of a package that can land us a good wide receiver or land us a good defensive piece.
Sure.
Or even a nice draft pick for next year, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I mean I don't know what a great wide receiver would be to trade for. I mean, if you're jumping the gun, maybe saying, but I know he's going to stay with
him. No, that's just ridiculous. Well, just, you know, what are your chances? You play fantasy football. If you have an abundance of running backs but not a lot of receivers, what do? You trade some of your running backs that you have depth in to get, you know, receivers. So based on that psychology, that's all I'm saying is they have – a bunch of running backs. That's not even included the injured former Super Bowl hero there that's on the men. So, yeah, James White. So, they have a lot of bodies.
They do. Interesting. With them losing Brandon Bolden, and I think possibly J.J. Taylor could be on his way out for New England.
He might be the one that they might trade because the word I'm hearing is he's looking good. And, you know, the other thing is, Devin, we were talking about earlier, players get hurt in training camp. So some of these quarterbacks that we haven't seen get moved, like Garoppolo and others, even Tannehill, you may see them wait until a player gets hurt to get moved. It's the same thing with running backs, where we have an abundance of running backs, and if a team star running back gets hurt and they're really needy, well, we have the chips and we can pull something off.
Right.
I'm not saying it has to be a wide receiver, but just something to improve the team. Well, eight running backs isn't going to win us a Super Bowl. No. So you got to do something to fill out this roster properly.
And we're going to need to cut down the roster. As long as we don't have number 15 or number one, N'Keal Harry on the roster, I'll be satisfied with that move.
I think that's a pretty safe bet that he will not be on the roster. Although stranger things have happened. So who knows?
I mean, it looks like him, probably Trey Dixon. He could be on the way out. Trey Nixon. He's still on the roster, so I think he may be cut. But the guy that we got in the draft, I'm excited for. Is there saying he could be the next speedster, maybe the next who are they comparing to? I guess
Tyreek Hill, I think.
Yeah, Tyreek Hill, yeah. So seems like we got the next Tyreek Hill in Taquan, whatever his name is, Taquan Johnson from Baylor. Did we get him from Baylor or somewhere? But I think he could be a great wide receiver for us that we could use either on special teams or even in the offense.
And that's the thing. Like, as you know, we hit last year in the draft with Matt Jones, with Stevenson, with Barmore. If we hit again, you know, if Strange ends up being a good here's the thing about Strange. All he's got to do is do his job and keep Mac Jones protected. Apparently, from what John Mitapurel mentioned the show, he was off, but he let Coach know his thoughts on Cole Strange. He actually saw him play at the Senior Bowl. He thought Cole Strange looked a little slow, and players were getting by him. Mm-hmm. So you hope we're able to coach him up, and we'll see.
It was a weird. Don't get me started with that, but you know, I guess Bill Belichick saw something in him that you know made him click, and maybe that he can make him into a better old lineman than he was, you know, during the senior bowl game or you know whatever. But you know, You know, I guess we can say, as our usual say is, in Belichick we believe, but I'm not too sure about this one. But I believe that, you know, with his drafting skills, I mean, we'll see how it goes throughout the rest of the season.
Well, one team in this town what we have believed in really since January when they started turning things around is the Celtics. Big bounce back victory in game two after, you know, they essentially traded dominant victories there at the Garden, where Sunday afternoon the Nets dominated the Celtics. Giannis looked unstoppable. And the defense without Marcus Smart really stepped up. I was really impressed with Grant Williams. Boy, has he! I saw something the other day. Someone shared it. Really made a lot of sense. Grant Williams is what Semi Ojeleye should have been for us.
Yep. Oh my God! I mean, wait, isn't he still on the Bucks, or what team is he on now? Because I
forget. We moved on from him. I don't know where Semi is now. But like, he got all that playing time under Coach Stevens. I think Coach Stevens wanted him to be where Grant Williams is now, a key cog in what the Celtics do offensively and defensively.
Exactly.
I mean, him and Al Horford were the best defenders on Giannis in game two, without question.
Easily put Big Al on Giannis, and you got yourself a series right there.
Big Al is hungry for a ring. That dude is playing out of his mind. You got to give him a lot of credit. Maximum effort, as Deadpool said. That's what Al Horford's giving you. And that's with the rotation being very thin. Devin, they only played seven guys in game two. The only two played were Peyton Pritchard and, of course, Grant Williams. That was it.
Yep.
They didn't even play Theis.
Nope. Well, yeah, that's right. I was about to say.
Only seven deep. And that was with Marcus Smart out. You know, in the playoffs, they shortened their rotations. And I thought Coach Udoka did a great job of that. It's the guy who learned under Greg Popovich. And I think you're seeing some of that Popovich coaching style in him. And I really love how he's, you know, developed as a coach right in front of our eyes. I think he's a great young coach, and I'm really looking forward to seeing him coach the Celtics for the next few years and beyond. I think he was I get the feeling that he was the one really managing that Nets situation last year, helping Steve Nash out.
Exactly, and you know, he knew the exact situation that the Celtics are in to stop the Brooklyn Nets this season. To absolutely,
oh yeah, no, he had the blueprint on Durant and Kyrie. That helped. That definitely didn't hurt when you know, you're a coach that's seen him play for 2 years and you know what's coming.
Exactly, because you and I both know that I was very skeptical with the Udoka, you know, signing. I was just like, oh.
Well, you were unfamiliar, Devin, and that's why you were skeptical. You were more intrigued with someone who was successful in the league as a player. Jason Kidd aside, let's not kid ourselves, no pun intended. It took Jason Kidd a while to figure out how to be a good Kent coach. That Milwaukee situation pre-Budenheiser was not good for Jason Kidd, as well as, remember, he was the coach of the Nets also a while back. That wasn't good either. But he's become a good coach with Dallas. And, you know, that's where he won a championship. And he just seems to fit there. And he's grown as a coach. And you know, he's got the Dallas Mavericks playing hard against the Suns, losing effort nonetheless. But still, like, it's not on Coach Jason Kidd. To where, like, look, Udoka, he's not doing anything to cost us the game. And as a coach, that's all you know, you see Doc Rivers, oh, you feel like he may be doing things to cost his team games, not calling timeouts, playing Joel Embiid late to get his damn face broken, you know, just nonsensical, non-mindful moves. That's what Doc Rivers does. So, like, Udoka, and I think Udoka is actually a better coach than Mike Budenhauser. Like, Mike Budenhauser got the best player in the series, no doubt about it, and Giannis. But to me, you know, coaching made all the difference in the world in the Nets series with Steve Nash, you know, and essentially, and not only Udoka knowing what Durant and Kyrie were going to do, but knowing the mind of Steve Nash. You essentially probably helped him become learn on the job last year, because Steve Nash had no coaching experience.
Right.
Where Udoka climbed up the ranks, learned under, you know, he was learning under Popovich while he was wrapping up as a player in San Antonio.
Because here's the thing, many people were counting out the Celtics, and you and I can vouch on this because, you know, we've been talking about how badly the Celtics were the start of the season. And we don't know, you know, what it got for the Celtics to get where they are today. Maybe it was a trade away Schroeder. Maybe it was a trade away, you know, Josh Richardson, you know, to get all the pieces out of here for, you know, the Celtics to do exactly well. And, you know, getting Derek White here, getting, you know, revamping Daniel Tice. You know, I think that was a big thing for the Boston Celtics to do. And I think I've heard it from Stephen A. or someone said this, that the winner of this series, whether it be the Celtics, which I am highly praised of, the Celtics winning this series, or the Milwaukee Bucks, they are destined to win the NBA championship.
Oh, shut up, Stephen A. I'll smack your five head off your damn balding head. Let's not disrespect the Miami Heat like that, shall we? Let's not. The Miami Heat are the number one seed. They're a good team. Tyler Hero is probably going to be the sixth man of the year. No, he did. He won the sixth man of the year, right?
Yep, he did.
You know, they have an interesting, you know, Spoelstra is a great coach. They all fall in line under Riley's direction as the team president. And look, like the Heat, they beat us in the playoffs just 2 years ago. I know it was the bubble, and people want to say, oh, it's the bubble. You bubble. We still lost. Jimmy Butler still is capable of doing weird things in the playoffs. Like, please, Stephen A., please, give me a break. Again, that presumptuous – and we were talking about it with the Bills. Here we go again with the presumptuous injury. First of all, Stephen A., you're a Sixers fan. You cut your cloth covering the Iverson Sixers before ESPN hired you. You're a Philly guy, and you got a hard-on for New York because you grew up in New York. So you're like an angry Knicks. And this is why, you know, he's a Knicks fan that's lost his mind. That's Stephen A. And the Sixers drive him nuts, too. Well, look, I think that's more a shot at the Sixers, at his Sixers, and just without Joel Embiid, how easy it's been for the Heat. But look, the Heat are the number one seed. Let's not look past them. I think a lot of us look past them in 2020, and they beat us.
Right. I mean,
so I'm not going to do that again. And if Stephen A. wants to jinx my Celtics with his presumptuous energy again, I'll take him up on that boxing challenge that he threw out there to Joe Rogan last week. Let me tell you, Joe Rogan will take you down to the mat and tie you up in a pretzel, you old loudmouth SOB.
Exactly. Here's the thing. I never.
That's the Mickey Mouse of ESPN, Stephen A. He's just a glorified mascot, is all he is.
Here's the thing, man. I never knew that.
And this is why, not to cut you off, I'm ready to like dig the knife on the ESPN. We already were ranting on them earlier with their hockey coverage. Yeah. You know, there's a reason why Michelle Beadle left. Ariel Helwani left. A lot of big names have left. You know, Max Kellerman couldn't wait to get away from Stephen A. They gave him his own show. You know, Michael Smith, Jamel Hill, a lot of big names have left over the years. A lot. And there's a reason for it. Because it's a crappy company to work for. You know, we're not even affiliated with them. We're Odyssey and EEI anymore. So whatever. Shots fired, ESPN. You know, my good friend Michael Lyle, he used to be a producer of Mike and Mike in the Morning Show when they were in their height of popularity in the mid-2000s. And he left. You know, so many people leave ESPN. I've watched, you know, I watched another interview recently on, who was the guy from Miami? He used to have his father on this show. What the hell is his name? He's like a Spanish dude, but he looks Caucasian. Another one that left ESPN. So yeah, all these people that leave, clearly your basketball coverage absolutely sucks compared to TNT's. Your hockey coverage sucks. You know, your baseball coverage sucks. You know, you had to pay big money just to get some big names for your football coverage. I thought the draft coverage was kind of weird. Like overall, like ESPN, like, get better. Like the Stephen A. thing, from what I've heard, Stephen A. is not someone who treats everybody nicely behind the scenes. And this is one of the reasons why I'm kind of going at him this week. Like, I don't respect people that don't respect the producers, the people that work around him. You know, he's a guy who his ego is probably about the size of their Bristol studios at this point.
Possibly. I mean, I never knew that Stephen A. was a 76ers fan. I knew that he was a Knicks fan.
Yeah, well, that's where he again, before ESPN hired him in the late 90s, early 2000s, he you know, was a columnist for Philadelphia.
Oh.
So he was great. He was covering the Eagles. He was covering the Sixers, you know, for the newspaper circuit.
Okay.
And then, well, you know, that used to be a big thing, newspapers. Not so much anymore, but
exactly, used to be. You know, thanks to the internet and, you know, technology, now we have better things than back in the 80s and 90s. But, you know, going back to what I was saying with, you know, it could be a true factor that, you know, if the Celtics do win, and I think, Joe, they have a big possibility. And I know I keep going to the Kevin Garnett, you know, ring ceremony, retirement.
I love that that stuck with you. Like, yeah. 'Cause it stuck with me, too, and I enjoyed describing it to you, and they've re-aired it a couple times even on NBC Sportsnet. You know, this team, they saw, look, this is how Boston's going to treat a Celtic championship team if you pull it off. So exactly. They're motivated. And again, like I keep saying, the revenge tour. Well, we lost. We got through the Nets, of course, with Kyrie and losing to them last year and Kyrie stomping on the Lucky and all of that. You know, Tatum essentially moving up the ranks, passing Durant on the player list. Many people surmise with that one. You know, we got that one check. The Milwaukee Bucks, we lost to a couple years ago when we had Kyrie Irving. You know, it's probably going to go seven. And let's, you know, to piggyback off what Stephen Idiot Smith was trying to say, that, you know, the winner of this series is going to be battle tested, is going to be hardened. You know, because this is clearly the most competitive second round series, most likely, that we're seeing so far. Tied 1-1 going into Milwaukee, game three. Tomorrow afternoon, another afternoon game. I hate these afternoon playoff games. I used to like them as a kid, but as a Celtic fan, now I hate them.
I mean, at least Monday night's going to be a Monday night game, so, you know, that's huge. For, you know, well, here's the thing that gets me discriminated, or disgruntled, may you say, that we have 4 days off for a game three coverage that our last game we didn't play is until Monday, or was it Tuesday?
It was Tuesday. Yeah, I know. I see. I don't mind because, like, it kind of gave us as fans a chance to catch our breath, you know, and look forward. It's good to look forward. So it's like Jay was ranting on that too. Like, but in my opinion, I don't necessarily mind it. You know, you travel to Milwaukee, let yourself get settled, and it may help the Celtics dev because it gives Marcus Smart a chance to rest up. Where he was all dinged up after game one, missed game two. Doesn't seem like he's got injuries that's going to cost him long term, but like he's dinged up. He's banged up. So, like, the extra day or two of rest may make the world a difference for Marcus. Never mind Time Lord, Jaylen Brown. They all have little nicks and bruises. So, I, you know, at this time of year, no one's 100% healthy. To me, as a Celtic fan, I don't mind. We know Middleton's going to miss the series regardless. That's been announced. So their extra day of rest wasn't going to help Middleton play in game three. But it may help Marcus Smart play in game three. And I think all the energy and only playing seven players also in game two, that was a smart decision by Udoka. He knew he could rest his guys for 3 days, knowing the schedule, so he could afford to play his guys only seven deep and play them the minutes that he did in game two.
And here's the thing. It's really sad. Where, you know, Serge Ibaka, he just got traded during the trade deadline.
And he hasn't even been out there, huh?
Dude, they usually put him in the last minutes.
He's like the LaMarcus Aldridge guy for that team.
Right. And, like, you know, I think he's a free agent after this season. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, he said.
Well, you know, Devin, all those Oklahoma City Thunder, we cited them earlier, Durant, Westbrook, Harden, even Ibaka. Mm-hmm. None of them are young men anymore. They've all been in the league 10, 11, 12 years. You know, everybody's like, where's Houston Harden? Well, he might never be coming back. This might be the Harden you stuck with. You know, like age, wear and tear, a lot of battles in the playoffs, you know, a lot, Olympics, like a lot of basketball, a lot of mileage on Westbrook, on Durant, on Harden, on Ibaka, you know, going all the way back to those Thunder days. So, you know, there may not be much tread left. I haven't watched Serge Ibaka with a fine-tooth comb since he was with the Clippers last year. I thought he did okay before. And remember, he got hurt. He was okay for the Clippers, and then he got hurt. So that injury may have taken its toll.
I think he won a championship with the Raptors, if I'm correct.
Yeah, he was one of the pieces they brought in. Finally, I was happy for him finally winning a championship, as well as Marcus Gasol. Both of those pieces were similar to when we brought in P.J. Brown, you know, for extra length, and he really helped out in the playoffs. You know, that's kind of where I see, you know, those moves.
And I love that.
For the Raptors in 2019.
Because I don't know if you saw when Kawhi Leonard hit that game-winning shot against the 76ers in Game 7. You know, all the Raptors players.
The reason why they fired Brent Brown. And honestly, based on the chaos that has been ensuing since Doc Rivers has been at the helm for Philly, that was a stupid move to fire Brent Brown and bring in Doc Rivers.
No, exactly. To bring the point up against Marcus Gasol. So when Kawhi Leonard hit that game-winning shot in Game 7, the crazy counts that went in, Marcus Gasol, he wasn't celebrating with his teammates. He was actually hugging Joel Embiid. He was actually comforting him because, you know, he felt bad that the 76ers lost. And he was actually, you know, confronting him and saying, like, you know, you guys fought out well. And, you know, Joel Embiid, he was crying and whatnot. So that shows a lot of character by Marcus Gasol. And that's why I respect him as a player.
To me, going forward, looking at Philly and Brooklyn, you know, that trade that kind of blew up in both teams' faces at the end of the day. I think Philly's in better shape because even though Harden's never going to be prime Harden again, you can turn him into the point guard. Essentially, this is what you got to do with Harden. You got to make Harden Steve Nash.
Yeah.
That will extend his career. He's become a good facilitator. You have Maxey. You know, you have Toby Harris. You have some good wing players. So I would really try to have Harden be the point guard that you wanted Ben Simmons to be, you know, with more scoring ability, obviously. But again, he's never going to be prime Harden putting up 50 again. That's just not who he is anymore. Too much wear and tear. No. He also parties a lot. That will wear and tear on your body also. You know, he goes out drinking. He goes to the clubs. He dated Khloe Kardashian at one point. All that takes its toll on your body, on your soul, on the whole thing.
Exactly. You know, here's the thing. I think you brought up like a few months ago that there's a James Harden curse for every playoff team that he's on.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with that.
And it continues. James Harden's, you know, Joel Embiid's face getting broken. Come on now. They may have been favored against Miami. You know, they had the match. That was the matchup. Bam Adebayo doesn't match up well with Joel. But without Joel, then now the lane's wide open.
That's what DeAndre, I'm saying.
DeAndre Jordan ain't going to play on the level of Joel Embiid. Get out of here.
Exactly. And that's why I think, in my perspective, I don't think that James Harden will ever win a championship come, like, you know, however many years he may play in the NBA. Because I think
he has a better chance with that Philly team than Durant and Kyrie do with the Nets. Exactly. If we're just looking at those two teams. And if they stay together.
Because here's the thing. If Philly goes down 3-0 tonight against, you know, the Miami Heat, their season's over. I'm sorry. Even if you bring Joel Embiid back, there's just no way.
As of 2 days ago, his eyes – he couldn't even look at his phone because his eyes were hurting. They were too sensitive from the phone light. Does that sound like someone who's going to play and give you 30, 40 minutes tonight?
No way.
And if I'm Joel Embiid, if I can't even look at my phone, if I'm having that level problems with this injury, you know, shut it down, dude. Like, your life on this planet is a face injury, like eyes, like you barely see your phone. Like, bro, this could affect you, like, long term. And, like, yeah, you could come and play with the Rip Hamilton mask, but you could still get elbowed again. It's basketball, it's a physical game. You play in the post. Most players take the most physicality by far. You know, he's not built like a truck like Shaq. You know, unfortunately, Shaq could take that punishment. Shaq was a unicorn in that regard and the amount of punishment he could take. And eventually it did take a toll on Shaq. We saw it with the Celtics. He gave us a half a good season, which is why we traded Perkins, by the way. Everyone wants to bring that trade up. But they forget that we had Shaq balling out with Rondo until he got hurt.
Right.
Just wanted to mention that. Like wear and tear is a real thing. And if I'm Joel Embiid, if I'm his family, if I'm his, you know, his friends, people that are looking at it, like, yeah, you want Joel Embiid to be successful and win a ring, but you want this dude to be okay, man.
100%.
I would advocate him not playing. Just, dude, like to me, like, there ain't gonna be no miracle healing in 72 in 48 hours, you know, to where it was being reported Wednesday that he couldn't even look at his phone.
You know, that should, like, you know, say something for you know, Joel Embiid. You know, if he can't read, like, you know, a simple text message on his phone, or he can't even open it up, yeah, that should be a little bit worrisome for, you know, the 76ers and whatnot. Here's the thing. They can say they had a great season. They beat the Raptors, you know, in round one.
Well, now they have the built-in excuse of the Embiid injury, so it almost works out for them.
Right. So it's just like, you know, you work on your stuff in the offseason. could be back maybe next season coming. I don't know. I mean, we shall see. You know, it'll be a very interesting offseason for the 76ers. I mean, Harden does become a restricted free agent after, I think, this upcoming season. Not after this
season. Yeah, and, like, do you really want to commit long-term money to a guy who's aging?
Yeah.
Like, this is the problem with the NBA, Devin. It's starting to get a little bit like Major League Baseball, where, like, these players are on stupid contracts at the back end of their careers. We're even seeing it in football now with Von Miller and stuff. It's a weird thing. So we're like, you know, like, you would, like, at a certain point, players would, like, play for the veteran minimum, or, like, you know, you used to be a star, but, you know, you're kind of a role player now, so you take less. Well, like, that doesn't happen anymore. That's weird, right?
No, exactly. And, you know, with Devin Booker, I really think that the Suns can go far, you know, make it to the conference finals. I think them and the Warriors have a
good seems match. Inevitable at this point. Both teams are up 2-0. It seems inevitable. The matchup we could see coming all season, really.
Exactly. I think with Memphis, it's 1-1. Warriors and the Grizzlies there.
That's right, because John Morant balled out there on game two.
Exactly. But I really don't think with the Memphis Grizzlies, with, I think, Dylan being suspended for one game, Dylan Brooks, he got suspended for the hit on Poole or whatnot.
I think it's unfortunate because he's not known as a dirty player. And I think it's a bit reactionary and basically Steve Kerr's press conference throwing shade, calling it a dirty play, saying he broke the code. The guys on TNT broke that down really good. And, you know, what they surmised was his lack of playoff experience. He doesn't know how to play playoff physicality yet. Like, it's not that he is a dirty player. It's that he's young. And, you know, again, like, people want to, like, throw a scarlet letter at someone for making a mistake. Like, physical game, things like that happen. And they, you know, the Gary Payton Jr. injured his wrist. Everybody, you know, I'm a wrestler. You're taught in wrestling how to fall, how to take bumps. And what Charles Barkley and Shaq were saying on the pregame is so true. Wrestlers are trained, like, you don't, like, brace with your arms. Like, you fall, like, on your back, on your butt. Like, you let that absorb it, on your elbows. Like, the worst thing you could do is try to brace your fall with your wrist. You're most likely going to break it.
Right. Obviously.
Your wrist ain't strong enough to hold up your body weight. To where, you know, just fall ass over tea kettle. To, you know, it feels awkward, but, like, you know, like the turtle shell fall. Like, you know, you just fall on the back of your shell, and, you know, you hope your back is okay. You hope you don't hurt a vertebrae or something. But at the same time, like, you could completely break your wrist trying to brace your fall with a wrist. Whether it's in wrestling, whether it's in basketball, in life in general, it's better. Your butt on your back, then, you know, the worst thing you could do is fall on your hands or your head. Those are the two worst places to fall on.
Exactly. So it's like, for 76ers fans, you know, and for, you know, Memphis fans, it's just like, you know, you guys got to watch out for injuries, and, you know, you just got to be careful and lay it low, you know. Sure, don't go into dirty plays in the NBA, you know, flagrant ones, flagrant twos, technical fouls, but it's just like, you know, you just got to live on and move on from that. Thank God he's only suspended for one game. I mean, I don't know how well Dylan Brooks is as a player, but
I mean, he's a key cog, obviously, for what Memphis does. But, you know, like, I don't think he's the make or break. I mean, it's not like they're missing John Morant, put it that way.
Exactly. It's just like, you know, if John Morant was out, I'd say the series is done. You know, the Warriors will win the next three games, and it'll be Warriors versus Suns.
fight for the, you know, NBA Finals. So it'll be a good matchup because we all know Miami Heat are probably going to sweep the 76ers since they have no one else that can really guard him out of bio. And, you know, I don't even know.
And shame on Stephen A. for disregarding the Heat and not acknowledging the Heat as a contender. They beat the Celtics in the playoffs last year. Me as a Celtic fan, I'm looking at it as it's a revenge matchup. And the Heat have always given the Celtics problems.
Yeah.
Like, throughout the modern, you know, era since the Celtics have been in the playoffs. It was the Heat with LeBron that knocked us out of contention when we was the top of the East. And eventually Ray Allen defecting there and the emotions evolved in that. You know, they beat us in the playoffs last year. You know, Dwayne Wade's put on shows against us in the playoffs. So they always seem to get up. And Pat Riley, that's a guy who never had any love for Boston. And he gets his troops riled up for Boston. You better believe it.
Right. That's why I love these NBA playoffs. And it's going to be a really interesting conference and semifinals. You know, I really think the Celtics, they're determined, Joe. They really are determined. I think they can beat this, you know, Bucks team. They got three more wins to go to do it. I think we can
big one game three tomorrow. Obviously, they say a series doesn't truly start until both teams have won on the other team's floor. I don't think the Celtics are scared of playing in Milwaukee. Milwaukee obviously does bring a tough home court advantage. Those fans are always hyped. We saw it in the finals last year against Phoenix.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen that the Celtics, they were able to go into Brooklyn, you know, survive drunk Mary J. Blige. She might have thrown a drink at someone the way she was going that night.
Oh, yeah. It seems like it.
You know, so you got to be able to win on the road in the playoffs. And, you know, they stole home court by winning game one. Well, only way to get it back is to win on their home court.
I think they can do it. I think we could split, and I think this could go 6 or 7. Or you know what? I say we win both.
That's honestly what you would hope for as a Celtic fan, is we split and we go into game five in Boston, you know, looking for that series swinging pivotal third win tied 2-2. Obviously tied 1-1, you know, the best case scenario would be come back to Boston up 3-1, win both in Milwaukee. But again, I'm not going to be presumptuous. I'm going to take this one game at a time. And, you know, based on the level of defense that we were able to frustrate Giannis. Giannis frustrated us the first game. We were able to frustrate him on Tuesday. And having Marcus Smart back should only help our defense. I'm betting on the fact that he's going to play with all this rest. And even if he doesn't play, I want to say this. Look, he's sitting there engaged on the bench. He's practically a defensive coach at this point. You even saw him running the defensive timeout in last series. So Marcus Smart, a lot more engaged on the bench than, oh, I don't know, say Kyrie skipping games to go promote Uncle Drew.
Right. You know, Marcus Smart is a way better player. Well, not a way better player, but, you know.
He's a way more passionate player that cares about his teammates more than Kyrie. Exactly. He's a better team player.
Like, you know, he actually cares about his team and actually wanting to, you know, go out there. Because, you know, I'm going to use a quote that I saw while watching WWE. Marcus Smart has a little fire in his stomach that just won't go out. That's the kind of player that Marcus Smart is as a player and as a player coach, too. It's just.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we saw it very similar to Garnett. Very similar. They obviously play different positions. They're different people. But that internal fire, they both have it. No doubt about it.
Exactly. That's why I'm excited to see, you know, who's going to win on Saturday. And the Bruins, they need to step up their game.
Oh, it's must win tonight. We got to stop the bleeding, and we need some damn goaltending, and we need to put the pucks in the net. You know, obviously, it's a recipe for disaster when you can't stop the puck from going in your net, when when you can't put the puck in the opponent's goal. So,
and we need to be up early, too. We need to have a lead.
Absolutely. Get up early. Get the crowd involved. If you're up early, up 1-2-0, that makes a world of difference with that crowd staying hyped as opposed to being down 2-0 in the first period. It can get very deflating very quickly in that scenario. Staring at the league. So give these fans a reason to cheer, boys.
Exactly. I can imagine that we win tonight 3-1.
and maybe that gives us a little bit agility to win more in Mother's Day on Sunday.
That's right. Where it's actually WWE will be in town also. Oh, first of all, happy Mother's Day to my mother, Beverly, to your mother, Devin, there, all the amazing mothers out there, to my girlfriend, Marissa, who's a mother. Certainly hope Mother's Day weekend is good to all of you. Yes. But in regards to Sunday, what were we saying? I like spaced out. I got, WWE's in town also. They're in town in Providence for a pay-per-view this Sunday, WWE WrestleMania Backlash. And I'm actually going to be working it. I'll be doing the loadout, helping break down the ring and load up the trucks. Who knows who's going to walk by me? Roman Reigns could walk by me, Cody Rhodes, anybody, Pat McAfee. So I've worked for Raw and SmackDown in the past, and literally Vince McMahon's walked by me, Roman Reigns, Dolph Ziggler, you name it. They've all walked by me. We're not really encouraged to interact with them. No pictures, obviously, but I did get to talk to Byron Saxton my first time there. He was a nice guy.
Okay. Yeah, because I was about to say, oh, you got to get a picture with him, but once you said you couldn't get a picture.
Like, no, because the thing with wrestling is you can, like, give sport. Like, sometimes people will take pictures before, but then, like, in the background of the picture is, like, two wrestlers that are planning their match. That's happened before. So they're very strict. WWE is a well-oiled machine, Devin. Yeah. And they're very strict to what behavior they will and won't permit. I'll put it this way. Like, when Vince McMahon walked by me, like, I didn't make eye contact. Like, I'm like, I've heard Vince will go up to stage hands and actually shake their hand and thank them for help setting up his show. It's not like, you know, he's just all evil all the time. Like, he does show compassion show, you know, appreciation for the people that work hard. But yeah, Jay will be there also. He's doing the load in and load out. Big shout out to Jay. I know he's all caught up, and it was great bringing back the Strike Zone this week. We've gotten some good reviews. Hopefully that continues. Go check out episode 68 of the Strike Zone. Like I said, great NFL draft review by Mr. Combine Steve Maul, as well as the fact that he's promoting his album, Narcissist, that'll be out this summer. He's got all the tracks essentially recorded at this point. He's promoting it on TikTok. He's getting followers. He's no Devin Telegani on TikTok, let me tell you, but he's getting there. On that note, what's the count on Dev the Sports Guy?
We're growing. We at 58.4, but we're
nice. 58 and a half almost.
Yeah, but you know, I was about to say something, but yes, happy Mother's Day to my mom. I'm taking her out to a Wright's farm in Rhode Island.
Oh, awesome. So. Look at you. You're a good amateur. Everyone knows Wright's farm's the place to take your mom. That's good job there.
Exactly. But you know, I'm glad that you guys got the Strike Zone back and going. You know, I'm happy for you guys. Episode 68. Must have been fun.
It was. We actually got some good reviews also, good feedback, and it was good to bring it back. You know, obviously, DP, we've been carrying the brand here in the Strike Zone channel for a little while, and that's only because, as you know, our schedules have revved up, Dev. Jay's schedule's revved up significantly with all the cam work that he does, and Steve's a single dad that works full-time, and that's recording an album. So, you know, we're all doing what we can to fit it in.
That's right. That's all that matters, putting in the work, talking sports. That's all that matters.
That's what we do. Make sure you tune in to 103.7 WEEI each and every Saturday. You got Cordishy and Corey, produced by yours truly, 7 to 9. And you got Mark and Kitchen, produced and starring by Devin Telegani, each and every Saturday, 9 to 11, with our rapid fire segment closing things out like Mariano Rivera every week at 10:45.
Exactly. I'm very pumped because after the shows, we get to go to our first group in lunch at Hooters. So that should be
awesome. Yeah, shout out to Ben Kitchen, who offered to take us out to lunch pretty much for your birthday, which was last weekend. Glad you had a very happy and awesome birthday, Dev. Welcome to age 27. Almost, you know, almost at 30. You're getting there. Starting to sniff 30 a little bit.
I'm getting too old, brother.
I'm 37, so imagine my feelings.
I'm 10 years behind.
Yeah, and it's all good. Enjoy your 20s while you're still in them. They're a lot more fun while you're in them than they are when they are memory. I can say that.
Exactly. It's crazy, man. It really is.
Dev, you have a wonderful evening. Ladies and gentlemen, go follow Devin on TikTok, on Instagram, Dev the Sports Guy. Get those TikTok numbers up as he's climbing towards 60,000 followers, 58.4 as of the counter. It's like the countdown in the millennium each week. We got the Gronk watch. We got the Devin TikTok counter watch.
Seems like it.
And of course, you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, JoePa_EEI. I'm on TikTok also, but I am not the content creator extraordinaire that you are, Devin, that Steve is. So I just choose to bask in your glory when it comes to that.
Exactly. And Steve's been commenting on some of my
shit. Yeah, no, he's trying to be a lot more. He knows. He's trying to get in the TikTok main events with you. He's getting his music on TikTok, and he's trying to step up his game. I told him, hey, you want to step up your game, you go to the champ, Devin Teligani. Try to get the rub, as we say in wrestling.
Definitely, yeah, for sure.
Dev, you have a wonderful evening. Glad you had an awesome birthday. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers in your life, all the mothers in my life, all the mothers in everybody's listening life. If you are our mother, thank you for listening. We appreciate the female demographics. Hope to get them up. Make sure to like and share the podcast, and we will talk to you next week. Make sure to hear us each and every Saturday on EEI also, and Sunday mornings for me. But, of course, the main event is Devin Teligani, starring and delivering.
Exactly, and then the main event with Joe P, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m.
That's right. I know we're the opener, but I mean, as the opener, like in wrestling, to give you a little, the best place to be on the card besides the main event is the opener, because you set the tone. True. And I love setting the tone. You close it out. I love being the tone setter.
Exactly. Can't wait for Saturday, man. I hope you have a wonderful Friday. Bruins better get a dub, and so on the Celtics.
Let's go, Bees. It's do or die. Don't poke the bear. The bear's been poked and prodded. Time to maul. Let's go, Bruins. Let's go, Celtics. Have a wonderful night. And the Yankees are still awesome, and the Red Sox still suck. But we didn't even get to that. We'll get to that next week. We'll save our baseball thoughts for the weekend. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody.